Welcome to Baird's Global Investment Banking Podcast. I'm Christy Obuchowski, a director at Baird, where I spend my days as an investment banker specializing in advising technology companies with a focus on the governance, risk, and compliance sector. Today, we will continue Baird's podcast series, where we intend to share with our clients perspectives from thought leaders on topics we believe to be relevant to the world we live in today and face in the future. Today on our podcast, I'm pleased to be talking with David Nolan, the founder of Fusion Risk Management. Fusion Risk Management is a leading provider of cloud-based software solutions for business continuity, integrated risk management, IT disaster recovery, and crisis and incident management. David has more than 35 years of experience in technology-related businesses, much of which focused on providing technology, software, and services to help organizations effectively and efficiently manage operational risk. David received his Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering from Villanova University and was awarded with the BCI Gifted Grades MBCI designation in 2015 in recognition of his contributions to the industry. Most recently, David was awarded the 2020 Disaster Recovery Institute International Lifetime Achievement Award. David, thanks for joining this podcast today. For the listeners at home, could you tell us a little bit about the genesis for Fusion Risk Management and what the company does today?
Thank you, Christy, and certainly. Fusion is a company that has been focused from the outset really on organizational resilience, and more precisely and specifically, operational resilience, meaning anything that could impact the ability of an organization to continue to meet its commitments. Our objective was to help organizations establish and maintain command and control day in and day out, right through a crisis. And in effect, we were focused on protecting the covenant of trust and a company's brand. Whereas insurance can provide relief in times of crisis, you have to be able to continue to deliver on your products and services. To do that, clients needed data packaged in a way that enabled them to make better decisions and a management system that had a robust information foundation that enabled them to analyze and visualize information in ways that would help them save money, save time, and effectively mitigate the impacts of an event. We coupled that as a company with a very strong recurring revenue model with very healthy unit economics, so we have a very healthy business. Last but not least, certainly, is we wanted to found a company that was committed to both diversity and community. And I'm proud to say that Fusion also is one of the best places to work in Chicago. And we have a program of giving back, which is highly active during this difficult time that we're all in today.
Thanks for that overview, David. From your perspective, how has the risk management atmosphere changed since the end of 2019, really for providers and clients alike?
Well, Christy, that's a great question. In some ways, much has changed, and in many ways, much has not changed. I think that the challenge will be to see how much of this experience sticks going forward. There's evidence everywhere of outdated systems and processes, and the demonstration of that is in how confused and chaotic things are. If we were in command and control, there would be significantly less chaos at every level, within every company or organization, and at every level of government. So that is all the result of a legacy of thinking of risk as a compliance or insurance agenda. And with that compliance, I simply get check marks. And I know I have this problem or that problem, and I've taken whatever steps were necessary to get the check mark. I didn't really focus on whether I could or couldn't survive or thrive during an event. And like they say, a rising tide lifts all boats, but a receding tide certainly, it tends to stink if you've ever lived near a beach. And I think what's happening is we're getting a sniff of the lack of preparation in so many cases. So what we're seeing now is a shift towards operational resilience, the realization that the focus on agility has made organizations vulnerable and fragile. And I think that's driving an acute awareness of enterprise implications that have reached up to the highest levels in every organization. And I think the awareness that there is no simple, logical place to contain that. So whereas in the past, risk managers thought about what risks do I have within my own four walls, now it's become painfully apparent that risks in significant measure exist in the supply chain and in public infrastructures. I also think that there's been a realization that insurance and traditional risk management systems aren't helping now. Operational risk systems are, because they put management in command and control and they help you actually work through something. But having a check mark that you complied with something doesn't do you a lot of good at this point. Big decisions need to be made and not enough data exists. And most organizations don't have the experience making those decisions. So they're kind of twice removed from being as effective as they should have been. So to net all that out, overall, there's a shift from agile to resilient that's beginning to take place. And that actually was recently well articulated in an article written by Forbes.
You're absolutely right. Before this pandemic, we really saw corporate boards shift from a focus on compliance and checking the box to overall risk management. And I 100% agree with you. We're only going to see this focus on risk management accelerate in today's environment. So when we think about business continuity and organizational resilience, oftentimes people think of an active shooter, a terrorist attack, or major storms and other acts of God. Is a pandemic one of the variables that providers are prepared for?
Well, I think the short answer is yes. And I think that it's a matter of whether companies or providers are prepared. I think, frankly, providers generally are better prepared than the general market is prepared. A pandemic is simply a disruption that triggers all four operational impact types. And so that makes it very holistic. It also means that everybody's in the same boat. But the service providers and people like Fusion are essential in what we deliver. And frankly, we've built our entire business model in a way that is not subject to the impacts of a pandemic. 100% work from home, work virtually. All aspects of the business have continued to function. In fact, have actually grown, continued its growth trajectory and continued, interestingly, hiring during this model because we had gone so far as to understand how to go through the interview process and hire people and onboard them remotely. So I think, the providers are definitely, most of them, if not all of them, are very well prepared for those kinds of things. I think conversely, general market and frankly our government obviously have not been ready for that, and that's not because they shouldn't have been. It's because of the way they thought about it before. They thought about it as a planning exercise where the objective was to get a plan document or a check mark, and now they're finding that really they pretty much needed to be prepared for whatever. I would also note that this is not the first warning shot. This is a grand explosion that has gotten everybody's attention. But if you look at H1N1, SARS, and Ebola, and you look at the TED talk that Bill Gates did in 2015, the signals have been out there for a very long time, for literally decades. And I think that pandemic is something that everybody's feared. One of the interesting elements about a pandemic, though, is that a pandemic affects everyone concurrently. And so there's a whole lot of empathy. When you or I or people on this talk start a business conversation, the first questions now are, how are you? How's everybody? Is the family healthy? And so forth. If you contrast that to the other types of events where you're more than likely the only person down or maybe part of a small region that's down, those questions have a lot less understanding. They fade because you're expected to be able to survive and sustain situations that may confront you. So I think that the key is that if you plan, you can't plan for everything. But if you prepare, you can be prepared to be flexible and agile in the response. And to do that, you have to prepare to be able to answer questions. What happened? What impacts can we expect? What don't we know? What do we know? What resources are impacted? What strategies should we deploy? the actions will ultimately evolve from the data, which has to be improved through experiences, exercises and simulations and things like that, coupled with situational intelligence, what's actually happening. But the key is command and control. And if you have command and control of your business at all times and through a crisis, then pandemic is certainly within reach. And frankly, doesn't really cause you to have to do much more to prepare. One caution, though, I think coming out of this, the worst thing, and this is kind of the behavior in risk management, is organizations perform or proceed kind of like the six-year-old soccer team where they just chase the ball around the field. And I think everybody's going to come out and say, we need a pandemic plan. And then something different is going to happen. And even if we do have a pandemic or a recoil from what's happening or an aftershock, it's not going to be the same. And the same problems will surface again. So the emphasis has to shift from planning to preparation. And then, yes, pandemic is right in the center of how you would think about it.
You know, we are certainly in unprecedented times. What are the most common requests that you're getting from clients in today's environment?
First of all, our customers are asking us to help them, and this is our customers, are asking them to help them with ways that they can report and visualize data to support the decisions they need to make. And they have a lot of that data, but oftentimes when I present data, I surface new questions. So they're asking us for ways to present and visualize data. The benefit is they have the data foundation, so they're more prepared. They just maybe didn't know how to surface that data or to bring it to light. On a broader basis, most organizations are asking, what can they do now? And our answer to that is pretty consistent. First of all, we produced a pandemic toolkit that I'll refer to later that it's free, it's available, and can give you kind of a jump start, accepting the fact that you won't have as much data to leverage as you could or should. But what we really focus on is pointing them in the right direction. And that means focusing on employees, customers, suppliers, and community. And I think that I would emphasize to organizations that how you behave right now will affect your brand going forward. And it can affect your brand in any one of those four areas. It can affect your brand in terms of who wants to work for you in the future, whether you retain or are able to hire when business picks back up. It'll affect the way your customers think about you if you've not been responsive and not been thoughtful about them. Your suppliers, your engagement is going to change, has to change in terms of how you think of them. And last but not least, your community. So this is an opportunity for leaders to lead, and we push our customers to think about it that way. I think also customers are now starting to realize that they have to transition back, and the transition period and the ultimate end game is likely to be different than the normal that they were used to. The new normal will be different. So they've got to wrap their heads around that. We try to help them, but the key here for us from Fusion's point of view is that our business is not reactionary like a disaster restoration business, for example. We're providing systems that help them establish that business competency so they're prepared. So at time of crisis, we're really helping them adapt and adjust and be nimble with creative ways to be even better. So the work here, the heavy lifting, has to be done on a day in and day out basis. Otherwise, you can't teach somebody to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball without a lot of practice and a lot of coaching.
So David, as we think about business resiliency, many companies attempt to build plans that can be implemented during either a workforce disruption, a workplace disruption, a supply chain disruption, or a technology disruption. The current scenario has triggered all of these. What should companies be focusing on today to get their businesses under control?
You know, Christy, that's a great question, and I think it ties back to the last one. The first thing they should be focused on is health and welfare of their employees. I think that has many facets to it. Most organizations have thought of most of them, but not all of them. So this goes to including how did you sanitize the work environment? How have you equipped the people to be able to interact and engage? What are you doing about the mental health and the way that people are dealing with isolation? Too often, those of us fortunate enough to have, nice homes and families that we're hunkered down with, and in my case, a golden retriever who's my therapy. We don't really think about those people who are stuck alone in a one-bedroom apartment all by themselves for this extended period. So we have to be communicative, we have to be engaging, and we have to help them make sure that they get through it. On a business side of it, I think communication to all stakeholders is critical. I think contemporaneous note-taking is absolutely essential. You're not going to remember what happened a month ago. It seems like a year ago. In fact, somebody sent me a memo today dated March 39th. I thought it was kind of humorous in that I thought March was the month that would never end. And so I think that contemporaneous note-taking is going to feed the after-action report and ultimately the actions you take. And you're going to want to be painfully reminded of why you were worried and why you were stressed, because those are things you can set into your program that would alleviate that going forward. And I think you need a plan to return to a new normal where you're focused on organizational resilience as well as safety and operational effectiveness. So the business challenge just got a little more complex. And it's not too late to start wrapping your head around that, because just like when a knife pierces the skin, the wound radiates from the point of entry. The same way is healing in reverse. It begins to come back towards the wound, and ultimately the final piece of the scar is where the point of entry was. Well, you're going to see that happen, where it's going to radiate and it'll be a residual back in the New York area, or there'll be a little bit in the center cities. And those kinds of things, I think, suggest that big parts of your operation will be restarting, and it's not just going to be, okay, everybody back to work. It's going to be, how do I thoughtfully bring these things together? And to do that, you're going to have to really understand how your business works so you bring it back in balance, and everything's going to function smoothly.
Well, we haven't experienced this scale of disruption before. In your opinion, what's the best example of value or return on investment delivered to a client in times like these? And how can companies measure their success with a business resiliency provider versus without?
So Christy, that's a great question. And rooted in the question is the assumption that the value is derived at time of crisis. Generally speaking, there are four ways to think about a return on investment as it relates to operational and organizational resilience. The first is what we refer to as risk-adjusted decision-making. That's the ability to make decisions that identify redundancies and single points of failure, and eliminate redundancies and eliminate single points of failure. And those kinds of things allow you to optimize your day-to-day business environment, and oftentimes can provide significant ROI, because in order to understand how to actually run a business in a crisis, you have to understand how your business works, how it breaks, and how you might protect and recover it and operate it in a crisis. So that first thing of risk-adjusted decision-making invariably results in savings and risk avoidance. The second is prioritization of risk-based investments. Too often today, risk-based investments, which are huge, like a redundant location or alternate supply, those kinds of things can be millions or tens of millions of dollars in some companies, maybe hundreds of millions in others. But the prioritization of those is often based on the limited vision that the management team has of the potential risks across the enterprise. And second, it's made based on emotion, where somebody is emotional, passionate, saying, really, really need this. The reality is that vulnerabilities and threats are endless, but the funds to address them are not. So it's imperative that an organization determine how much they're willing to invest in mitigating and managing risk, and balance that against the full spectrum of potential investments, and then decide where they're going to invest. And complementing that is where they're not going to invest and why. So there's risks they'll accept, but I think that prioritization process is important. The third is program management effectiveness and efficiency. The reality is that if you don't have systems to support this, you have people chasing their tail, and the lack of preparation is evident. All they can do is create some plans. They never get around to creating a process where the underlying data is updated. They never get around to exercises and simulations. They never get around to challenging the efficacy of that data. They never really get around to it. And what systems do is they do estimates are anywhere from 40 to 75% of the work that those people are doing, and frees those people up to be more engaged with the business. And the last, and possibly in many cases the least, from a decision framework, is risk mitigation and avoidance. Because, you know, as long as, there's that old saying, you know, every day I don't buy insurance and I don't have something happen is money I save, until the opposite is true, right? So the idea that you would invest in this just because something less bad might happen, when something bad happens, is probably not the reason you want to do it. You want to do it for the first three reasons: that you're making really good decisions, that you're setting the right priorities, and that you're making efficient use of your people.
Right. That's a tremendous framework for, you know, using your words, gaining command and control. Now, as we think about multiple industries, and I know Fusion works with clients across multiple industries, do the continuity plans change based on industry? For example, how does a client in the travel industry cope with this versus a client in manufacturing versus financial services?
You know, Christy, that's an outstanding question. And I would say the answer is the preparation is very similar. It'll be nuanced and it'll sometimes vary in its intensity based on industry. But the reality is that every organization really has kind of a matrix, and the matrix may vary a little bit from industry to industry. So on one axis of the matrix are the four potential impacts, which is a workplace, a workforce, a supply chain inclusive of public infrastructures and so forth, and a technology. We can have thousands and thousands of reasons why one of those four will fail. But when it comes to impact, which is what we care about from an operations perspective, those are really the four areas. And a pandemic actually triggered all four, as we talked about before. It started as a workforce, evolved quickly into a supply chain, then into a workplace, and ultimately now with some of the challenges with technology and scale and everybody operating from a home at the same time and so forth, in many cases, a technology disruption as well. On the other axis, you have, what are the strategies? I mean, what real options do you have? You can go to an alternate source. You can relocate people. You can go to an alternative process. You can deploy a work from home. So there are a set of strategies that are practical by industry. You can't, for example, send a retail worker home to work from home, but you can shift to more online and up your advertising, for example, to push your online product while your stores are not getting the foot traffic. So the key here is to think about what are the potential impacts, which are those four, and then what are the strategies that might realistically be deployed. And you might have four to six or seven strategies max, but they might be different even within your organization. So the headquarters and distribution centers in a retailer, for example, might have different options than the stores would. Similarly, the operations in the back office of a bank might have different alternatives than the branches.
Thanks, David. You know, we're a month into this pandemic in the U.S. For companies who don't have a business resiliency provider today and may be grasping at survival, what can those companies be doing right now to keep their businesses going?
So I think that if those companies are still hanging in there, I think obviously the financial people would say preserve cash as a first thing, and I know that's pretty prevalent. The second thing I would say is take care of your employees, particularly key employees, and make sure they know they're valued so that they come back ready to work. Remember that they have been traumatized, and your brand will be redefined by how you care for your associates. It's noteworthy that we continue to hire and hire pretty aggressively. And the fact that we not only didn't let anybody go, but we continue to hire is getting a swarm of people looking to come for us. So I think that's obviously a positive for those who manage employees well. They are going to be very desirable. And I think social media is going to surface some really good stories and some really bad stories faster than we've ever thought possible. Second, I would say more forward thinking. Think as broadly as you can. Think about how you can help others, and think about what your supply chain looks like, and how you're going to engage them, and what is their ability to step back up and start getting the engine turning. You know, it's that old flywheel effect. The first couple of turns are hard. They're a grind. So I would say expect that to happen. You got to get the flywheel turning again. It's going to be some heavy lifting and it's going to be some grinding and things aren't going to work as well and as cleanly and as easily as you would hope, because we have been down long enough to develop a little bit of rust. The third thing I would do is make somebody responsible for taking copious notes. And make sure when you do that to include the why for anything on your wish list so you can establish value for that later. So why did you make this note? Why did you care about this? Why was this a problem? How did this really impact you? Those kinds of things will be invaluable. And schedule now, even before everybody's back, because you can do this virtually, for kind of a midterm and then a final after action report so that you can actually walk through what were the things that were really material that we've got to make sure we're prepared for next time. And again, a lot of that all feeds into being prepared to returning to a new normal, not being prepared to return back to the way it was, because we're not Dorothy and this ain't Kansas. So we're not going back where it was. And lastly, I want to just say that you have to make sure that you've got to be in command and control quickly. So how do you establish it in the new normal? And then from that point, how do you maintain it?
Thanks, David. We're just about out of time here, and your expertise and insight has really been invaluable. But I wanted to leave with a couple final questions here. What about after this? What behavior changes do you see operators making on a go-forward basis? And even as I also think about the world of M&A and investments, the current scenario has and will certainly continue to change how investors look at risk management of target investments. Do you have any words of advice?
Well, I think this is something I think a lot about. First of all, I would tell you that things will be different. And I can think in the context of the things we're already doing. So we're already creating a policy and protocol for conducting web meetings where people are in the office but stay at their desk, and as a future state, and being ready and prepared for that, because putting too many people in one room and jamming everybody in is something that we want to avoid when we can. I think we're also looking at workplace configurations and behaviors in the workplace so that we can make sure that we create a safer, cleaner work environment. So those are things we're thinking about on more of an operating person. I think there's going to be impacts from an investment point of view that are tied to the behaviors, where I think one of the things that's happened here is we've proven a number of things. We've proven that we can work from home. We've proven that we can close deals remotely. We've proven that in many cases, the reality is people are even more productive because they didn't get on a plane, spend 3 hours waiting to get on the plane, 2.5 hours on the plane, you know, an hour and a half meeting and then fly back home. So I think we're going to see situations where at a minimum, you might have one or two people that go on site with a client and support personnel will be in a web meeting. And I think that's going to change the dynamic of business travel and the productivity that we see. And I think that the good news there is I think there'll be an opportunity to increase productivity as these new work patterns evolve. And result in us, frankly, wasting less time. You look into academia, and I think this is something I would call the attention of the business community. Workplace learning, virtual learning, those things should ripple down into lower costs of education and better learning experiences. I've done some training sessions as an example, and the average training session gets viewed by the participant on a per participant basis nearly 2 times. After the fact. So the recordings are as valuable as the live sessions, and they're not just watching them once, they're actually bouncing through them a couple of times, and that allows them to kind of absorb things. So I think we ought to think about training and onboarding and learning and how we create those experiences. When I shift to be thinking of an investor, I think that it's hard to believe, having been through due diligence a few times, that due diligence is actually going to get even more intense. And I think there's going to be a focus not just on what is the business model and is there a customer concentration at a high level. I think vertically dependent models, like one that sells only into hospitality right now, one that sells only into airlines right now, those things are going to be a kind of vertical concentration concerns. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a shift in the premium for organizations that have strong multi-vertical capabilities, especially when they view other verticals as potentially challenged or problematic. And then most importantly, I think there's going to be a whole different level of diligence to understand how operationally resilient is this firm. How nimble can they be? How agile can they be under pressure, so that you don't have a situation where they're going, your investment in those firms is going to be at risk. And I think a lot of the folks in the private equity and venture community are deeply concerned about a lot of their portfolio companies, but companies that had a very diverse customer base and a very resilient business model and solution become significantly more valuable in times of this. So that's kind of where we're looking at. And I would just leave you with the thought, which I'll coin from Forbes, and that was agile is fragile. And so if they're too agile and they're too fast, you know, that means that if something happens, you know, they're going to fly over the handlebars of that bike faster than some others might.
David, thank you for taking the time today to share your insights with us. And to our listeners, we hope that this conversation was helpful as we continue navigating these challenging times.
Well, you're welcome. And I would just encourage anybody who's looking for more, there's a white paper in the pandemic toolkit on the www.fusionrm.com website. All of that's free, and those things might help embellish some of what we talked about here today. But thank you for the opportunity, and good luck, everybody. Stay well.
Robert W. Baird & Company Incorporated, member SIPC. Robert W. Baird Limited is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For more information, go to rwbaird.com.